You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We are also heard on the World Wide Web. Miss Ellen, and where can they find us on the World Wide Web?
Well, you can certainly go to the station website, which is www.1510wwbc.com. And you'll find all of the shows here on WWBC. And then also on our website, SitaMediaInc.com. And that's also SitaMedia.com. We have them both spots. All of the archive shows for the last, believe it or not, Sita, 8 years.
God is good. We're doing great.
Really good. And then, of course, all of that gets transferred over to Facebook as well.
So that's right.
We have it everywhere.
We do use social media because it's free. We also know that it comes with a responsibility. Freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, and freedom to post comes with a responsibility.
Amen. Sure.
So we're kind of nice about it. So every Monday, Ellen and I sit here with Pastor Paul, and who runs our board. Thank you so much for always being here for us on Mondays and giving us the opportunity to keep community radio alive and share what people in Brevard County, Florida are doing, not just for Brevardians, but people all over the world. Because what we do, other people look at us, they learn from us, and we motivate so many people to go out and be the best they can be.
That's right.
And get involved and stay engaged in their communities, because that's what community radio does. It reaches out to so many people who are ordinary citizens, just minding their own business, doing what they can. And I think it's great that we still have a voice.
Supporting their families and so forth.
Yeah, we have three FM stations and we're online, and we have a lot of people that download our show, and we have a lot of people that go on our website at Sita Media Inc. and listen to past shows as well.
That's right. And one of the exciting things is that we had the Grammy Award winners that swept this weekend. Her mom was on the show like 3 years ago and talking about how she was starting her music career and doing all the festivals and shows and things that
Billie
she was doing.
Eilish's mom, Maggie Baird.
Maggie Baird.
I was very proud of Billie last night. I didn't get to watch the awards ceremony show because we were coming back from Houston, Texas. And I just want to give a shout out to all the lovely people in Houston, Texas. They were just so kind, and everyone was smiling and happy and treated us really good. And we tried the Impossible Burger at a nice place.
Yeah.
It was really good downtown.
Oh, I love that.
It was really, really nice.
Yeah.
But I mean, of course, the bad news, it's very sad news that Kobe Bryant, the legend, you know, in my time, it was Michael Jordan. And in today's world, for this generation, it was Kobe Bryant. And people wanted to see him do so much more. And, you know, when the news kept trickling down, the daughter passed away, and then other people passed away, and such a sad situation in that helicopter crash.
Yeah.
Yeah. Terrible. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I know the kid, you know. I feel like I know him, and I cried, and my husband looked at me and I said, I feel like the same loss that I felt when JFK died. Mm-hmm. That's, I cried for him too, because I felt like I knew him as well. And then I cried the same tears for Kobe Bryant, because I just feel like we were not prepared. Nobody's prepared for death. Mm-hmm. When Mr. Death comes, I tell you, it doesn't care if you're black, white, green, Hindu, Christian, Muslim, whatever you are. Mr. Death is coming. It's taking you.
And nobody knows when it's going to happen. He was on his way expecting a great day with his daughter at an away basketball game.
Every day you wake up, you say, thank you, Lord, for a great day. How can I make this world a better place? That's exactly what both of our guests do. Yeah. Our friend Matt Price is here. And Matt's a friend of the show. And he is the president of the Nurses Union right here. We don't have a huge union, but he is the president of the Nurses Union. So thank you.
Hello.
And he's here to chat a little
good
bit with
you
us.
Again.
Thank you. And then we have, on our second segment, we're going to have Dr. Bawana Bostic. I love her name, Bostic. And she's the founder and senior pastor of the City of Refuge Christian Center, right here located in Cocoa, Florida. She hails from Palmetto, Florida, and has dedicated her life for God and for serving Him from such a young age. Her heart's desire is to teach people how to apply biblical truth to every facet of their life and encourage Christians to impact every aspect of the world around them. How beautiful. That's what we just said about waking up every day. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So we're going to start off our show today, Ellen. You know, I don't know about you, but, you know, every day we're hearing more and more about gun violence. We're hearing about people who can't cope. We're hearing about, you know, people who are taking their lives by suicide or whatever because they just can't cope. Mm-hmm. And Matt and I, we were chatting about, you know, that does not just affect everyday people, who it affects the healthcare professionals in a great way. And I think it's something that not a lot of people are addressing in the healthcare administration, how to cope with stress and anxiety and long work hours. And Matt, we were talking about so many people have depression that they don't tell their coworkers about. People just don't talk. So
yeah, they're afraid to speak up about it. They're afraid it's going to affect their license or their job, and they may not be able to support themselves or their family.
Right. And so, I mean, how do we go about helping someone, assuming that someone has expressed a desire to hurt themselves or others?
You know, I think at first of all, we need to address that stigma that it's there. You know, and we need to recognize that it exists, and in first responders and in nurses, we're seeing that it affects greater percentages of those people. The University of California did research in last number of years, and it was published last year, and it showed that there was an overall 13.9% increase in nurses and in first responders as well. And so it's something that we definitely need to look more into and find out how that we can help in that situation. But I think, you know, we talked a little bit, Sita, about what things, you know, what types of things in the profession that are specific to healthcare and first responders that cause increases in suicide. And, you know, some of the things that people experience just day to day in the workplace is that they're not getting their lunch breaks. They don't have that moment to themselves to emotionally
detach.
Yeah, to say, I'm stressed out. I need to just take a minute to, you know, absorb everything that's going on. And so, you know, to create a more healthy work environment is important, and making sure that people are getting their lunch breaks and when they need to take that stress break, that they can do that. And even to the point of saying it's okay to take a mental health day. You know, maybe you need to go and
or just a
find
wellness
some
day.
Peace. Yeah,
yeah,
find some
day.
Peace in your life. And sometimes you need to be a way to do that.
Well, I think that's one of the things. I mean, how many times we've heard nurses say, I have to go to the bathroom, but I don't have time. Mm-hmm. We don't take care of ourselves. Right. We just don't. Or we'll be filling pitchers of water for the patients, but you don't drink a pitcher of water yourself.
Right.
I mean, or you're giving the patient a tray and you're buttering the bread and you're cutting up the fruit and you're taking care. But do you really take time for yourself to go sit in the break room and do that same thing for you? We don't.
Right.
I mean, I've heard of so many nurses with UTIs and dehydration and all that because, yeah, we just, and I'm not sure anymore. Sometimes we do have the time, but it's bad behavior or just a pattern. So we just don't do it. I think we need to make the time to take breaks. And I've been one of those that, although we're allowed 2 15-minute breaks and a half an hour lunch, I don't take it. But now I'm reading where there, you know, psychologists sociologists are saying, if you take a 20-minute break, it's good for you. Get a buddy. Have somebody to go with you and walk if you could for that 20 minutes if you don't want to eat. Sit in your car and listen to music, something, you know, meditate, do something, but we don't do it. We talk about it, but we don't do it.
I worked as a travel nurse in Chicago a number of years ago, and the chief nursing officer of Mercy Hospital said that she wanted all the staff to leave the unit for their 30-minute break. Because she knew the only way that they were going to have an uninterrupted lunch was to actually leave the unit. And she also knew how healing it is to leave that stressful environment and allow your mind to rest during that 30 minutes when you... You know, so that you can come back
but
and
Matt,
be ready to care.
In the real world, right. when you say to someone, hold my narcotic keys, I'm taking a half an hour, what do you get?
It means you're getting all their patients to care for on top of your own assignment.
Right. So you're right. So how do we fix this? Because we're seeing where there's a burnout. There definitely is a burnout in nursing and healthcare professionals. How do we fix it?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that we can do. Obviously, there's more and more stress and pressure being put on healthcare workers to do more with less. And so I think we can relieve some of that stress by just appropriately staffing. And, you know, I know of friends that work out in California, and they say they have a relief nurse that actually is scheduled to come and relieve you for your lunch break. So you don't have to put your work off on someone else or make another nurse feel like they have to take care of double the number of patients during that time. You know, the lunch break and all that is so important. And then other things is people are actually experiencing PTSD from the things that they see and hear and do in their workplace. And we have to realize that that is a real problem, just like it is for people in the military and people that are first responders, PTSD is real. And people have nightmares and people have sorts of things. And we need to be debriefing after major events that happen in the workplace that emotionally tear people up. You know, people think that we get used to seeing people die or we get used to see people coming near death when we bring them back. And you don't get used to it. And it's just some days it affects you more than others.
Yeah, I mean, even when someone passes away in the nursing homes, you're right. Everybody handles grief a different way and death and dying, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that the nursing assistants have to go in and make the bed and housekeeping cleans the room, and before you know it, family's there to pick up the belongings and another person is in that bed. And, you know, for some of the nurses, you're right, I think maybe we should have some sort, you call it a debriefing, but yes, a moment where we could reflect on what happened. We don't have that. I've never seen that, where the nurses get maybe 10, 15 minutes, someone comes in and say, you know, someone just passed. Sit down for 15 minutes, have a cup of coffee, and think about what just happened. We don't have... In 35 years of nursing,
right?
I've never seen that, and you're right.
Yeah, or after a code or something like that, to be able to talk about what happened during the code. You know, let everyone speak about if they felt everything was done right or if there was something we could have done differently, so that their mind is put at ease knowing that we did do everything right. We did everything that we could.
What happens if you have a nurse who feels guilty about a code if someone passes away? What system is there to help that person so that they don't go home feeling so overwhelmed and so guilty?
And that's what the University of California is trying to do in their research. You know, they have a new tool that they are researching called the Healer Education Assessment. And there's a referral program that goes along with that to help intervene when people do have those feelings of grief or guilt and they don't know how to deal with it. They need to develop better coping skills or or develop other methods to help increase resilience in the workplace, and so that we don't see those levels of burnout or in some cases even suicide.
Yeah. But how does one address a coworker that's thinking about taking one's life? Do we have referral services in the hospital, or do we just say to that person, how can I help? Do we call someone that we know? And say, because, I mean, when people are thinking about taking their lives, they're not thinking about their loved ones. They're not thinking about their job. They're not thinking about the future. I mean, do you just look at that person and try to trick them and say, how do you see yourself in 5 years? And if they don't have an answer, how they see themselves in a few years, you know something's wrong.
Yes.
Because they don't have any hope, so they're not seeing ahead.
And a lot of employers do have an employee assistance program to where workers can be referred. There's also the National Suicide Hotline, and they can do appropriate screening of people as well, if the person is willing, you know, to call that line or to talk to someone. But I think just support within your own coworker group is important too. And I know we talked before, Sita, about with nursing, knowing that you have supportive managers and that you have supportive physicians and surgeons and the rest of the team, whether it's housekeeping or whether it's someone in dietary, wherever, that you know you have that supportive team, that when you have those emotional days and those highly stressed days, that you can joke around and you can vent, and that you have a safe place to do that. And you know that when you're telling your manager that you don't have enough staff, that they're going to listen to you. You can trust that they're going to hear you and do something about it to help reduce that stress level and make our patients safer. Because the last thing a nurse wants to do is go home at the end of the day and feel guilty because they didn't feel like they were able to do everything for their patient, or to take that extra minute to sit down and talk about what is stressing maybe a family member while their loved one is laying there in bed. So, you know, I do want to say kudos to those wonderful individuals, those surgeons and those physicians that stand up for their nurses and say, yeah, we need to hear this. These are the people that are at the bedside caring for everyone else, and we need to make sure that they're cared for too.
Well, you know, we focus so much on the opioid crisis, but the American healthcare workers are dying by suicides in unprecedented numbers, right? They're saying now that as America focuses on one, the American healthcare workers are being ignored. How do we get more managers to have a morning meeting with their staff, or maybe a weekly meeting with their staff, and for all of us to say to each other, something is wrong with this person or that person, or this person went home crying yesterday, this person was complaining about her workload. I mean, it's a team effort, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, that's what it takes, right? It's common sense, right?
I heard a nurse leader once say that she liked to say in her meetings, when she opened up her meetings, if cost was no object, what would we be doing for our patients? And so we can sometimes find ways to do things that are less expensive than what we would think in the beginning. And so sometimes I think we need to think outside the box, and we can find things that are not super expensive, but they provide big helps. You know, just as we talked, you know, just having that debriefing time.
Or meditation. You know, have a room where you could meditate.
That is a cost, to say that you're going to have someone leave for a few minutes. That is a cost, but is it worth that cost? Because later, what could happen could be more costly, the cost of a human life that we can't measure. And so whether it's a patient life or a nurse's life, we certainly need to hope that those managers will be supportive and offer up the assistance that's needed.
Well, you know, we hear people...
And not be punitive, because I find people feel like they're retaliated against. Even if you just have a physical work injury and you go and report that, the next thing you know, you're being written up for this, that, and the other because they don't want broken people working.
Newsflash, we have a lot of broken people in healthcare, in every profession, actually. But here's the thing, nurses have this way, not just nurses, but healthcare professionals, doctors, nurses, first responders, nursing assistants, we self-medicate.
Oh, yeah.
And that in itself could be very dangerous because we think we could cure ourselves from everything that's going on, but we can't. And that's something we have to watch.
And we know that most of these nurse suicides, there's a greater number of those suicides that were done by pills than a firearm, although in males the firearm is a little bit more prevalent than in the females, but a large portion of the nurse suicides are pill related.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that they talk about when they talk about suicide prevention is to, if you have a family member or a friend who has a firearm at home and you think that person might be thinking about taking his or her life, that you should try your best to see if you could get that firearm away from that person's home. I mean, and I think that's a good idea, but not everybody is willing to give up their firearm because they're not admitting that they have a mental illness. So, I mean, so it's not just by over-medication, but it also, we have to watch. I mean, how do you know if you have a coworker that's mentally disturbed to that point and they have a gun at home and they're going to use it?
I don't know. I guess if you're close enough to your coworker, you might know those things, but otherwise you might not. I can think of a couple of instances throughout my career, though, where we knew a coworker needed to seek mental help and then had to come back to work after that, and it was very difficult for them to come to work. And I think it's a positive thing when your coworkers are able to embrace you and say, it's okay. You know, we all have these times in our lives where we have an increase in stress and we need that help, and it's okay to say, yes, I need help.
I think if you know of someone or you overhear a conversation of someone who is planning, who's isolating themselves and you think is depressed and you're working with that person, I think it's okay to say to that person, do you have a gun in the house? Have you been stockpiling medications? I think it's okay to ask those questions.
We can ask about
because it's
plans.
A process, right? Because
certainly.
Suicide, it's a process. People think about it, they plan it, and then they do it.
That's so true.
You could jump right in here, doctor.
Yes, because, you know, what we do at the Cedar Refuge Christian Center last year, actually we had a community youth rally, and the theme was teen suicide. And everything that you talked about today is right on point. And the teenagers go through the same. And those questions were asked. You know, are you thinking about killing yourself? Do you have a gun?
Right.
And, you know, just trying to get them to open up, you know, to someone to trust, you know,
right.
to let them know that I'm in trouble or I'm thinking about, you know, harming myself.
Right. And I guess it's okay to ask a human being, doesn't really have to be in the nursing profession, but to ask someone, has anyone in your family completed a suicide?
Yes.
Has anybody attempted? Because then you kind of would know that this person is predisposed in some ways because that's what they saw in their own family, right?
Yeah.
I think it's okay to ask that. I mean, we're all adults and you know, sometimes you hear something, oh, somebody passed away because they sat in their car and they turned the ignition on and the garage was closed, and you say, oh, I never knew. But I'm sure somewhere along the line, somebody saw something but didn't say it, because we live in a society where we live behind gated communities, but we don't know our neighbors next door. We have family members who are doing extremely well and some who are not doing well, and they don't talk to each other to say, how are you? How are your children? How are they doing in school? Mm-hmm. Are you working? Do you have health insurance? How are you coping with the everyday situation that life brings every day when you wake up? Do you think people care anymore, Matt, that they're asking these questions? We ask these questions of our patients. Right. But are we asking our if we do a checklist, right, when the patients come in, you know, how are you, mini mental exam and all that. But are we really asking each other in the break room or when we see each other outside of work? Really, it's three words. How are you?
Yeah, I usually ask when I see someone's behaving differently at work. I go up and ask them and I say, are you okay? You seem different today. Because, you know, after you work with people, while you kind of know their demeanor and when it changes, then I think it's caring to inquire about it because you're caring for your coworker. You know, we need to care for our caregivers as much as we do our patients.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with my friend Matt Price. He's a registered nurse right here in Brevard County, Florida, and he's the president of the Nurses Union, and he will be up for re-election soon. He does care about his patients, our community, fellow nurses, and healthcare professionals. But before we go on break, here's one that really bugs me. How do we get rid of managers who are bullies and who nurses are afraid to speak off or about because your job is on the line, your health insurance is on the line, your livelihood is on the line? How does one
and they're increasing the stress in the workplace and that, and you know, creating an unhealthy work environment?
Yeah, because you know, there is always that one person that the nurses would say, boy, I'm so happy I'm not working with so and so. And we all hear it and we know it, and how do we fix that? I
think it starts from the top down. We have to recognize that lateral violence is real, and that that we're not going to tolerate it. You know, that from the top down, we're going to create a culture with a healthy work environment, and that includes no bullying, no retaliation, you know, that we're not going to allow those things to exist.
Well, and you've done speeches about coping mechanisms and how people can develop skills to deal with this kind of stuff in the workplace. Right. But, you know, there is retaliation, not just in nursing, but other professions as well. And they would know how to get rid of a person if they did that. And we've heard so many stories. We had your friend Julie that came on the show and talked about what happened to her.
She spoke up about unsafe staffing.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know what? It's not, we all have this big slogan, put people before profits. Right. But in real life, that does not happen all the time. So how do we expose people, not so that they lose their jobs, but that they change their behavior towards each other?
Positive change.
Well, the issue really, and what it comes down to from a conflict standpoint, is always that people try and fight emotion with emotion. And that doesn't work. And emotion and logic can't live in the same place. So from a logical standpoint, for a lot of conflict is just really because you got two emotional people going at a problem with that same emotional force. And it's hard not to do that because we're passionate about things. But the idea is to sit down and try and understand things from the other person's view a little bit about why they feel that way, so that way, from a logical standpoint, that you can kind of approach it.
Right.
You're never going to be able to deal with a bully.
Right.
You know, a bully is going to be a bully.
Right.
They're always going to stay in that emotional
head. And maybe
they're
not bullying, but they're looking at it differently too. Like you say, get two sides of the story, right?
Exactly.
But here's the other thing, you know, when oftentimes people think they have to stay in that job, in that position, but you could quit, you could resign, and God opens doors everywhere if you leave. And I think that's one of the things that nurses are afraid of, losing their sick time, their PTO, their vacation, everything that you have accrued up to that point. But you know what? Sometimes you do have to have a fresh start.
Well, but I think people are leaving, though. That, you know, if we look at turnover rates, we see 20-30% turnover rates in our facility, and the national average is much less than that. So I would think someone needed to ask the question, why do we have that kind of turnover rate?
Right. I was just going to say, is there an exit interview? Because at the exit interview, you're supposed to ask, why are you leaving? And I would think if they take all those answers and put it together, they can compile the reasons, like you're saying, why people are leaving. Because I know I had to leave a toxic work environment once, and God opened the widest door for me because I left, because I felt it was the time. But how many nurses, but you're saying nurses are leaving before they're 18 months or before 2 years, before a year. That's terrible.
Yeah.
And as their president, what do you say when they tell you, I'm leaving because of a bully, or I'm leaving because of, you know, poor working conditions, or I don't have enough staff? I mean, equipment sometimes they don't have.
Usually I try to find a solution with them and try to work with their director. And if it's not going to work with their director in their department, then I try to help them get transferred out of that department, work with HR and get them transferred somewhere else where they've, you know, feel like they're supported and it's safe for them to speak about things like unsafe staffing and the fact that they're not getting their lunch or that they got hurt on the job or whatever. You know, they have to feel safe and knowing that it's okay to speak up.
I know. I mean, do they encourage nurses to speak up though? Do you have like mandatory nurses meetings or or even if you have a questionnaire that you don't have to write a name on it, but you just write what's happening in your unit.
I think some people do. I think some people do speak up, but there's still a lot of people that are afraid of their job and their license.
It always comes down, Pastor Paul, to health insurance. Everybody's afraid to speak up and lose their benefits. Because what happens when you lose your livelihood? I mean, you're one step away from being homeless.
It's true.
And then you'll have to end up with Dr. Buona, you know, at her place looking for... I mean, it's just, you know, every day we wake up, we say, oh, it's going to be a great day. We should all care about each other, treat others with dignity and respect. But then you wonder what happens to human beings once you give them a title and to become somebody in a department or a CEO or whatever. Do they actually forget the little guy on the street? You know, I think sometimes people have to take a look at, you know, their own lives and how they were before they became whatever they are in that position of authority, because they don't sometimes look down, because they look down on others, you know.
That's right. What a great conversation. But we do need to take a quick break to listen to hear our sponsors and all the great people that support Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, Enso, and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haulaway available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud 9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on WWBC AM 1510. We're also on FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. And we're having such a nice conversation. You know, it's wonderful to do shows that I consider human interest stories, Miss Ellen.
Yes.
Because it's something that affects all of us. And you know, Matt, one thing I forgot to ask you before we go to Dr. Bawana Bostic is, you know, there are signs and symptoms of grief and how people cope. And so do you have any that you've seen with coworkers or people have told you about that we should be looking out for? Because if we know what to look out for, then we know how to offer help.
I don't know if it's actually signs, but we know that when people have something that causes grief in their own life, that puts them at risk. And, you know, you mentioned Kobe earlier, and believe it or not, that's something very nationally seen, and that can have an effect on people as well. And for nurses, it's no different. Grief, whether it's of a family member or of a patient or of a loved one, it certainly has an effect, adding to the other stressors in their life. And if they don't have that resilience or those coping skills in place, they may think about ending their own life. So, you know, as we talked about, those tools need to be in place, and that we need to say when someone doesn't seem okay, we need to ask them. We need to speak up to them one-on-one and ask them what's going on.
Right, and I think it's fair to say to someone who is hurting and unable to cope, if your circumstances were to change and you got a better job and you moved to a different location, and would you feel better about yourself? Because sometimes people are stuck in a rut, and all they need to do is, like you, they're leaving in droves, like you're saying, in nursing, but circumstances at home maybe can change as well. You know, we don't know what's going on in somebody else's house.
That's right.
My mother always said, you don't know what's cooking in somebody else's pot. You know, so you have to kind of take a walk in their shoes and think about it, because what you see sometimes is not what you get. Mm-hmm. You know, and I see Dr. Bawana Bostic is shaking her head about that. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, how did you? I mean, you're from Palmetto,
yes,
in Miami. You moved to Brevard,
yes.
And did you always want to have your own ministry?
Not always.
Yes.
Well, when it comes to being led of the Lord, sometimes we go kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
Pulled by our hair.
Yes. And as a pastor, I went kicking and screaming. So
yeah,
it took me some years to yield to the Lord in that area of ministry, but I finally did. But I've been here in Brevard for 34 years, married to my husband, Ira. And I guess 7 years ago, the ministry evolved.
Yes.
So we're here in the City of Refuge, in the city of Cocoa, and called the City of Refuge Christian Center. So we're just, you know, outside of the walls of the church, and that's where the people of God is, and where the Lord has placed me. You know, I'm right here on Peachtree, Fisk, if you know anything about Cocoa.
You're like 5 minutes away.
Yes.
Yeah, so so the name City of Refuge, it makes one feel welcome.
Yes.
And calm. And yes. Come to me. I will take care of you. How did you come up with that name?
Well, actually, I do journal every now and then. And looking back for a name during that time, I just wasn't sure how what to call the ministry, and I just began to look back in my journal, and there it was. Some years ago, I had already written down the City of Refuge, and from there, I feel that the Lord gave it to me some years ago. So it was like a Bawan, it's already done.
Yeah, and I noticed when Matt was talking, you were shaking your head quite often because you are seeing people who are hurting.
Yes.
And they come to the Center of Refuge as well.
Right. Because a refuge is a place of safety, you know, a place to go when you're hurting. You know, you're running from something to a safe place. And the City of Refuge, you know, we are there with open arms for all of those that are in need. And it doesn't matter whether you're a teacher, a lawyer, commissioner, the mayor, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. The Lord is there for you. And there's a place of rest in Him. So that's what we do at the center. We are there to, you know, open those doors for those that are in need.
Do you see a lot of people who are burned out, tired? They're just worn down, and they just need that person to say, let me help pick you up.
Yes. And, you know, we are on the corner of Peachtree and Fist once a month, and we're holding signs, letting people know that God loves you, and stop and pray. And we have a lot that are walking. We have those that are driving by, and actually some turn in to get prayer. And even you can, you know, with your natural eyes, see those that are hurting, the, you know, the addicts, the homeless. And they are saying, please do not stop coming on the corner. Please pray for me. Please keep this up. So you see it with your natural eyes, you know, and I say the natural because the spiritual as well, just to give you understanding. But they are there crying out for help. And yeah. And we want to help them in every way that we can.
But what is the difference between your ministry and other ministries? We've had so many people that came on our show, and they do similar things. I think mm-hmm. the end result is everyone, at the end of the day, they want to be loved and appreciated. And they want to be needed as well. And they want to be treated with dignity and respect.
Yes.
So what makes yours different?
Well, we feel that just, you know, walking outside of the walls of the church is so important. And so many churches choose to stay within the walls, to preach to those that are inside. And because everybody's not walking into the churches now. They're not walking into the doors. You know, they're seeking on social media, TV, television, just not coming in at all. And we're taking that next step to step outside to give a hand to those that are in need. Go through the neighborhood, you know, knock on the
door. So you're going to the people.
Yes.
Instead of waiting in the church on a Sunday or Wednesday evening or Friday for someone to knock on the door and come in.
Right.
And isn't that what that's what it should be, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
It should be that people are reaching out to each other.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so where do you see the ministry in 10 years?
Well, I see the ministry in the places where, and we're going to give him a name, the devil, the enemy, Satan. You know, he's the father of lies. He wants to take your identity. He doesn't want people to know how important they are.
He sounds like a politician.
How loved that they are, right? And that's where we're going. Whether it's television, radio, social media, in another country, that's where the Cedar Refuge is going. So you see us everywhere
yeah.
in 10 years.
You know, I saw a meme on Facebook yesterday while I was in the airport, and it says, the little child says to his daddy, he says, so if the Bible says we should help the poor, welcome the foreigner, heal the sick, respect others, not lie, not commit adultery, not steal, then why do we support? And they had a name to it. And the father said, oh, Billy, we don't actually practice these things. We just preach them.
Mm.
And, you know, in truth, sometimes you think about religion and how many people say things, but they don't follow through on it.
Right.
And it's really commendable to see someone like yourself who is not just preaching inside of the church, but you're taking the words outside of the church to heal the sick, to welcome the foreigner, to do these things.
Right.
Because we don't really see that as much. We see people that open the doors and say, come to us.
Mm-hmm.
So why would someone want to be part of the City of Refuge Christian Center?
Well, being a part of the City of Refuge is so important that we ourselves, you know, make that personal connection with the Lord. You know, it's a personal thing. It's not that, you know, some people don't come to church. They may say, because I know this person in a church and they are not who they say they are. You know, they did this, they did that.
Hypocritical,
yes. But the thing is, it's a personal relationship with the Lord. If you go to any church, there's not a perfect church anywhere, and people may be looking for a perfect church, but once we walk in the church, it's not perfect anymore.
Yeah.
Because we are not perfect people. So when they attach themselves to the City of Refuge, you have a place where you can grow. You have a place where you can allow the Lord to use the gifts and the callings that he has placed in you. And we all have a calling. We all have a charge. And I, as a pastor, want to see you get there. I want to help you get there. You know, whether it's through Bible study or coming to a Sunday service to help someone, whether it's in our youth department, you know, training the youth, evangelizing, you know, so many different areas in the church where you are needed. And when you're not connected to a church, you're not giving to the kingdom of God. You're not giving those gifts away, because those gifts don't belong to you. They belong to the people.
Right.
So, you know,
And you're right. It's not just in Christianity, but I think in all religions, nobody is perfect.
Right.
I mean, people are just waking up every day and trying to do their best.
Mm-hmm.
But some of us do have a calling. It's called a gift. And you have that gift of bringing people together and being humble and kind and showing people that if you're hurting in this way, we can help you. Sit with us. Let us help you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's great. I mean, I think when I wrote my book, I wrote, I remember being a little girl in Trinidad and Tobago, and there was a gentleman who used to give the children 25 cents. And so we would line up outside of the temple on a holy day, a festival, and he would give us a quarter. And I lined up twice. So I got 2 quarters, and he knew I lined up twice. But I said to myself that day, when I grow up, if I have a little bit of money, I want to be like this man that made all the children feel so welcome in that temple. And we were able to buy a soft drink or some, you know, something good with that.
Mm-hmm.
But he shared his money with others, not only with us, but he promoted things in the temple, paid for food and water and, you know, things for everybody to come and enjoy on a Sunday. And that's what his way of giving back. And you're,
yes,
giving back to the community by going out, by making people feel included. And so your church welcomes everyone.
Yes.
There is, from all walks of life.
Everyone. All walks of life. Yes, ma'am.
And if somebody wanted to find you, what is the operating hours?
The operating hours are 10 a.m. on Sundays. And we are housed now at the Volunteers of America of Florida, right there on Peachtree. And that address is 906 Peachtree Street, COCO, 32922.
So right now, I mean, each ministry, no matter where it is in the world, they need assistance.
Yeah.
People need, of course, everybody knows. I mean, and I don't like when people say, I don't like to give money to a charity. They have to pay lights, water, telephone, and for the place.
Mm-hmm.
They have a mortgage. They have to cut the grass. You don't want to be walking and the grass is this high. So most places need donations. They need to partner up with businesses, and they need people to donate whatever they can, time, money, energy. What can we do to help your ministry?
And every one of those you just mentioned, time, money, and energy. Time is so important. Volunteers are needed. And as I stated earlier, you know, we need those youth leaders. You know, we need all those that are willing to serve.
So if Matt wanted to come by and talk to some of the teenagers,
mm-hmm,
or people who are hurting about what he does as a nurse and how he can reach out, he can do that.
Yes, he can. He can. And, you know, we can be reached on our website, and it is City of Refuge BBM, like boy, boy, Mary, at gmail.com.
So out of 7 days a week, you have devoted your entire life to the ministry.
Yes.
So from morning, so you wake up in the morning, and I would think you have people who reach out to you from the community, or people are referred to you from the community. Take us into the day of Dr. Bwana Bostic.
Okay, a day with Bwana Bostic, and it is 24/7.
You know, that's a book. That could be a book right there.
Well, and I was just impressed, too, about all the ministries that are going on. It's not just the outreach ministry that you're doing on the streets and helping people praying there, but the City of Refuge has a job placement center. They have a prison ministry. They have a counseling center, radio ministry, counseling services, a food pantry. So lots of great things.
I mean, well, because
running all of that, I
yeah.
can imagine.
Well,
a life
and
in
they
a,
reach
a life
out to the prisoners too. You guys reach out to people who have just been released
There's
from
also
prison,
closing,
who's looking for
yes.
places to live and clothing. I saw that
clothing
as well.
Closet ministry as well, which is great. I mean, you know, again, if you've got those old suits or those old dresses that don't, you know, that don't work for you anymore, I mean, that would be a great place to donate those things, because, you know, it would be going to a great family or to a great person that obviously would need to, possibly with the job placement, right?
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so tell us about your day. So you wake up and you've got this whole day planned.
Okay. Now, I volunteer also at Cape Canaveral Hospital, and it is called underneath the spiritual care team. So I go in and I pray for those that are sick. And that's what I do on Tuesdays. And I volunteer at Volunteers of America, Homeless Vets, right there. I have a Bible study there every Thursday at 10 o'clock. And I call it Wrap Session Bible Study. Just allow them to come in and unwind. Just tell me about who you are. So I call it Wrap. So we talk before we get into the Word and we pray. They need jobs. They need homes, you know. They need peace, and in that place, they're able to receive those things. I also just go through the neighborhood, as I mentioned, on the street corners. I'm praying for people. Those that are in homes, I stop by. I pray for those that are sick, whatever the need may be. I do get calls from a lot of people in the neighborhood, and hopefully in my calendar I can put you down and
because
get
you're
there
so comforting.
As I can.
Speaking just looking at you, I feel comforted. I could call you if I need you to. But what about your safety? Because I mean, you're out on the street corner. I mean, do you feel safe, or do you have someone look with you, buddying up with you?
That's my desire, but it's not that way all the time. As far as physically,
mm-hmm.
but spiritually, you know, my prayer is that the Lord cover me in the blood of the Lamb, and I'm protected wherever I go. So I have to have my total trust in the Lord when it comes to that, for sure, because I'm throughout the neighborhood, and that's where the Lord has me. If you know anything about Cocoa, Peachtree and Cocoa.
I do. Actually, I'm going over there after work to Hickory Street to have lunch with a friend there. But so how is the reception when you meet people? I mean, you've probably have quite a few success stories of people's lives that you've turned around. How much time do we have, Paul? Another minute or two?
3 minutes.
Okay, tell us about one of the success stories.
The success stories, let's see, there's so many that I can choose from.
Yeah, that people come up to you and say, you changed my life.
Yes. I can choose the story about the young lady that came on the street corner. And actually, she was in the abusive class or
domestic violence.
Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And she was housed right there. Salvation Army has a really nice place where they can come. And she wanted prayer that day, and she cried out, I mean physically cried out, and we prayed with her. And she, of course, shared her story with us just to let us know what was going on. And later we found out that from her that she was delivered from that, and she was just so happy and pleased that we were there at that time, you know, to pray with her.
the right place at the right time.
Yes.
But, you know, I think most people, that's what they want. They do want somebody to care and to listen and to show respect for their human soul.
Yes.
Because so many people just look at other people and they say one thing and they do the other. It's a, we live in a hypocritical world at times when people say we care about the sick and the poor and the needy and the elderly, but in reality they don't.
Yes. That's so
and
true.
So that's what happens when you go out and people see that. They see that you actually mean what you say and your actions speak louder than words. Mm-hmm. So if somebody wants to donate or help the ministry in any way, what should they do?
You can reach us on our website, also Facebook page. Again, that's City of Refuge, BBM, .com. That's the website. And the phone number, you can reach us at 321-285-9615.
Maybe we can do a food drive for your pantry, like Ellen just said.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
We do that sometimes throughout the year, too, and we actually have some now that we could donate to you. So
wonderful.
We'd love to do that.
Yeah. Think about those suits and those dresses and those work clothes that you're probably...
Well, you know, I'm always trying to feed people. My mind goes automatic to my curry chicken and rice, you know.
Right.
Yeah, we'll try to do something for you. I mean, because, you know, sometimes people have a lot of stuff at home and they're good things and they're not using it.
Mm-hmm.
And for my listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, if you're going to give away something to someone, please make sure, be respectful. Don't give somebody something that then you're not going to use yourself. People want to be treated with dignity and respect, even when they have their hand out.
Right.
That's so true.
I think we have to always remember that we're all created in God's image, no matter... if we're rich or poor, or what color, what religion, what class, and treat people with respect.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll give you the last minute, and then Ellen will close off our show for today.
Yes, well, just stay in touch with us. We have some great things coming forth. If you want to be a partner with us, just reach out to the Cedar Refuge Christian Center and keep in touch, because we have some awesome things coming forward.
Any
in
events,
this new
really
year.
Quick? Any dates coming up? Any events?
Actually, we have a women's event coming up on March.
Well, let me know and we'll see what
March
we can
do. We'll put 17. It out on our website.
And Matt, sure. Matt, give us the information for you if somebody wants to get a hold of you and get involved in healthcare issues and make the workplace a better place for all of us.
Our website is www.nursesunionyes. That's nursesunionyes.org.
Ellen, we can take a frown and we could turn it into a smile on Viewpoint with Sita
and
Friends.
And what a great discussion today. So thank you both for being here with us today, and we'll make sure that we share all of this great information. The podcast usually is out within 24 hours, so you can listen to the replay for the show, and we'll have it on our website as well as on our Facebook page. Once again, another fantastic edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Sita, thank you so much for getting such
You're welcome.
Guests. We'll see you soon, folks, next Monday, live at 1 o'clock.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
And you're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, as well as W235.